We're here in the Canyon Gallery on the north side of the Boulder Main Library, downtown Boulder, to have and to hoard an exhibit of a tiny fraction of objects collected by Joel Hartlig over many, many years. Joel is here with me, as is Andrew Novick, the curator of the exhibit. Gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hey, let's start over here because this is the medium to which we are recording now. A plexiglass box full of transistor radios. Describe what we're seeing, Joel.
Well, I've always liked transistor radios, of course, but you're seeing them from the, I guess it's from like sort of the early 60s into the 70s. I grew up here in Boulder, and before the mall, there was a place that had a camera store, let's say. And they would have transistor radios, but the ones that were the most expensive and interesting to us as kids were these real little ones. This is not one of them, but it's about the right size. There it is. This one's 7 transistor. Do you see how small that is?
Oh, yeah, it's about 2 inches square.
And that would be something like $65, which was a huge amount of money when we were kids, but we wanted that kind. So up here, you see the these would go on your wrist. So they were, and the colors are a tip-off because the 70s were all primary color stuff, where that was a big deal.
We should say, for people who didn't grow up in this era, before the music was on your phone, before it was on the iPod, even before it was on the Walkman, this was your portable music device.
Yes. I didn't listen to sports, but we listened to music. So then they were doing, here's Tony the Tiger, you know, or there's one up here for Hawaiian Punch.
Yeah, it's over here. I saw the iconic Hawaiian Punch guy from the
Jimmy Carter shaped like a peanut.
A peanut radio. Transistor radio. So just a tiny example of what's on display here in the Canyon Gallery, which in itself is a fraction of what you have collected. So if all your stuff was together, how much square foot, how big a building would we need to hold it?
I'm not good at that, but I would say in terms of how much you see in the gallery, let's say if you don't include the walkway, it'd probably need another 19 of the same size to display it like this. Now, it could be tighter together, and then it wouldn't have to be that much space. And also, there's the expression that's important to the it's the distinction between a hoarder and a collector is know thy shelf.
Well, you know, I did, in preparation for this interview, as I searched
and to thine own shelf be true.
I'm searching my many pockets here. I brought up the Mayo Clinic definition of a hoarder. Let me see if I can get the hoarding disorder.
Well, there's also hoarder culture you might want to look into.
Persistent difficulty discarding or parting with possessions because of a perceived need to save them. A person with hoarding disorder experiences distress at the thought of getting rid of the items. Excessive accumulation of items, regardless of actual value, occurs.
So it's a whole lot like in The Silence of the Lambs, where Clarice Starling is asking Hannibal Lecter, Dr. Lecter, about why does Buffalo Bill do this? And she comes up with some stuff, and he says, no, he covets. And what do we covet? We covet what we see every day. Now, this doesn't quite make sense, that the hoarder is afraid to throw something away, but that sort of means junk mail and maybe magazines that he's already, or he or she has already read and so forth. That's not what's going on here. I go and actively find these in the context of a garage sale, which is way nicer than a thrift store. Yeah, it's fresh air, you're doing it, you know, early in the morning. Certainly the people are a lot nicer on both sides. There's halo effect, there's stories about the things, there's your opportunity to suggest to somebody that maybe they should keep it for their cousin or their grandkids, the family, you know, quilt that their grandmother made. All of that has a lot, and plus the people experience is much better there.
No, and I knew someone who was a hoarder, and their home was full of what you said, stacks of mail, of newspapers, of plastic bags they might need another day. Not interesting stuff like this.
Well, there's also my mother, born in 33, you could say maybe she had depression era mentality. She thought it was bad luck to throw away a rubber band. So, you know, and then they would collect a tin foil and so forth. And no, I don't have that. I guess I seek these things out, but do I covet them? No, I already have them. And it's, all right, so the real story is that the alienists that I've talked to have suggested the reason I feel I need to have all these things is because I wasn't nurtured right when I was little.
Well, let me turn to Andrew Novick, the curator of this exhibit. How did you go about helping Joel select from the, 20 times more than what ended up here?
Yeah, it may be 50 times.
Oh, God.
Like some of the folks helping curate this, like we talked about how much stuff there is, because he's got 10 storage units. And seven of these storage units are 28-foot tractor trailers full of stuff.
Okay, so this is helpful to me to visualize this. So seven semi-trucks full of stuff,
yeah,
plus more.
Plus three garages, plus Joel's house, plus the cabin. And so I did a little calculating. You can see there are 35,000 cubic feet of storage you were asking earlier. So how we went about it was I went with Joel into some of these storage spaces, and we started kind of excavating, you know, it was like an archaeological dig. And just finding stuff that I thought would represent the collection. And, like, I didn't know the extent of it either. So we just started going through and, like, kind of foraging our way back to the back. And then, you know, kind of methodically going through. But also, this was last summer, we went to a lot of garage sales. So while we're pulling out the stuff and kind of getting it organized to bring here, Joel's also acquiring a lot more. And one of the most fascinating things about this is these notebooks that I don't know if you've got.
Let's go over to the notebooks.
Yeah, I think you need to learn about that.
So along one wall of the Canyon Gallery are a series of
a shelf of
three ring binders. What's in these binders, Joel?
Well, as it turns out, at the very end over here in 2008, I came up with the idea of I'm going to somehow come up with a way to document what I'm doing at garage sales about this stuff. This is the first one. This one's actually cataloged. It was cataloged here. This is a real long Dewey Decimal number on the other side to the right of the period. And this actually is loaded with information. This is actually very interesting about what that long, what is it? It's about 12 digits. It's also got a barcode, as if you could check it out. They did the whole job for me. But in the end, the style was to have these maps that I would use for maximum efficiency on the road. You've heard maybe that, is it the FedEx drivers only take right turns?
Something to do with saving fuel and maximizing the efficiency of their routes.
Do that too. And then the idea was to lay it out and take a photograph of it as well.
So we're looking at a map of Boulder with some red circles.
This one here is for Saturday, July 24th, 2010. That's how much money I spent. This is the photograph of the loot.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, you spent $48.75 hitting, looks like...
This is a large thing.
Oh, this is a big map. We were only seeing part of it. So you, on this date in 2010, you... he's unfolding the map.
It's two 11 by 17 sheets that are taped together. Look at how many garage sales were on that date. Look at how... I mean, the nice little groupings, of course, but since the damn panic, it hasn't been that many.
Now, so you hit all those garage sales, and you document that on the map, how much you spent,
this
and then...
This is the efficient route map, and it's also color-coded by the time of the time, 8, 9 a.m., 10 a.m. usually. Then this is the layout of where I... And as you can see, it becomes a little fetish-like, this lay it down there and take a photograph. So I get a rush when I buy it. I put it in the car. I get a rush when I take it out of the car and take it up for the photograph. And then I get a rush when I look at the photograph anytime I want to as well.
There's like 20 binders, and they're all full of what you just described. We just described one page of one binder.
2 to 3 inches thick.
Yeah.
And so these are expensive binders if you tried to buy them brand new, but at garage sales they're not. You know, it's like this could be a $30 binder because these 5-inch ones are very expensive, but...
Well, let's go. Let's look at some more of the exhibit as we here on the floor is this is probably about a 4x5 pyramid of cassette tapes.
Yeah, and it's got at least but maybe almost 10 layers. Well,
and they're all unopened, it looks like.
Yes, these are all brand new unopened. But look at it. Look at the colors. It looks like a fireworks display. If you go and see fireworks, it's visually exciting, and I guess it had to do with they were trying to market their cassette by a TDK instead of a Maxell, and then there's others like Super Tape that you maybe never heard of. This is just visually exciting to me, but it also has to do with my involvement in cassette culture in the early 80s, that self-publishing was, in music self-publishing was really blossomed and thrived through cassette culture. Underground, international underground cassette culture was what I was involved with.
Yeah, I recall that time, and it seems like it's coming back a little. I see more DIY artists putting their stuff back on cassette.
Yeah.
Maybe if they want some blank ones, you've got a pile here.
The invalidation that I received from somebody was, say, my group, Architect's Office, was putting out a new cassette. And instead of saying, oh, I'd be very interested to hear, they say, oh, a lot of people are doing that nowadays.
But I'll tell you what, people will see this, and they really want it. Like, I did a display, another display for a young lady, Ellery, at the teen space.
We did it in the front, and I solid in this display case were these cassettes like that. And this guy was convinced that at the end of the display, he could come and take them away. They were just going to throw them away.
Well, on the point about people wanting this stuff, a young man who's a security guard here at the library was just talking with you about some folks coming in thinking this in and of itself was some kind of garage sale.
Yeah, well, I don't take the price tags off of things. And so some of them, you can see the price tag on it. And I had one story that somebody took some of these things and took them to the front desk and tried to buy them, pay for them and buy them. It's like here, see, here says 50 cents.
Oh, yeah, 50 cents for these little dollies.
I like to, you know, it was Millie, what was the name of the, it was on Hee Haw, Minnie Pearl. She always had her price tag still on her hat. And it's like, hey, that's the right way to do things. Just leave the price on it.
We've come to a spot on the floor that where someone has left their luggage. Or
briefcases. Well, I started collecting briefcases, of course, too. It's part of like the, you know, the manly art of the briefcase thing. And it just occurs to me that it looks like in The Shining when all those people are taken off after they're closing for the season and they're huddled around baggage like this. But I guess it looks okay.
Well, one of my favorite parts is this. We're against another wall of the Canyon Gallery now, and there must be at least 100 board games, most of which, in fact, maybe all, I think, I've never heard of.
Well, yes. When it comes to board games, I want older ones. One of the ways, you know, you can tell it's old is it doesn't have a barcode on it. So previous, about 1978, before the barcode. And, of course, you know, I'm pre-78. I'm born in 1958. So I want the older stuff. I don't want the newer stuff. And then and of course, the more obscure the game is, the better.
Yeah, like who? Here's a game called Veda, the Magic Answer Man.
Well, it says no batteries, no wires. And what it is, of course, is it's using a magnet to kind of do a sort of a thing that might appear to be divination, but it's not. It's just magnets underneath something. There was one with Groucho Marx, too, that my grandparents had that was like that, too. It was a $64,000 question or something. Turn on this thing. But, yeah, that's the way it is. I'm trying to think there isn't some stranger ones here.
$6 million man game, but a 70s television
show. Have a look here. These things are gorgeously boxed. It's a big cover with artwork, full color, right? So, you know, like on records, 12-inch records, we had artwork, and then it went to CDs, one-fourth the size. Now you don't get any artwork.
Yeah, they're graphically beautiful. Yeah.
And so that much, and people don't seem to want them much, and they certainly are selling them off. And so that's something you can get that's fun. It's pretty.
Over here, we have
music boxes.
Can we open one and hear the music? I know we're not supposed to be touching.
The idea of the way I collect music boxes is it should be one where I don't know the tune. I haven't got a clue what it is.
Oh, where you open it up and you don't recognize the tune.
Lara's theme or, you know, Sound of Music. Going to be something strange. This one just says, if. It's a good one. Let me get a bunch of them going at once. The thing would be that they're that I don't know them. That's good. This says the happy, this might say the happy widow or something. Oh, that one I recognize. That's a Bavarian tune. Isle of Capri.
You'll never recognize the tune.
This is Lüget vom Berg und Tal. Is that one playing? Maybe not. So there's four going at once.
Well, while we listen to the chorus of music boxes, which is fabulous, let's walk over and look at some more. Well, here, how we used to do math back in the day, the pocket calculator, the abacus, the slide rule.
Yeah, so what this is the, before the pocket calculator, slide rule, as it were. And I actually think they're far more, they reveal more about the function of numbers than a calculator where you just type it in and it gives you a long run. You can see the logarithmic scales here and so forth. And you can see like how this is going to get, it's by some kind of a scale where suddenly, why is it getting that they're closing to, the lines are closer together? You see what I mean? And so
yeah, my dad taught me how to use one of these.
And then the pocket calculator, it was explained to me by a guy at the museum called the Slide Rule Museum. It's Slide Rule, not Slide Ruler. Is that these early expensive pocket, and they were very expensive, were marketed as electronic slide rules, which was definitely directed at don't buy a slide rule, to put slide rules out of business, you see, and this came in. But then these just became the, what else they could do.
Yeah, it strikes me as part of this is a history of what are now considered outdated tools, outdated media.
Yes, it is, but I still think that the slide rule shows you function of numbers, the logarithmic scales and so forth, between 3 and 4, it shows where pi is, 3.1415926, right? And it's you might memorize that number like that and know that pi is between 3 and 4, but on that scale, you can see that's where pi is.
No battery or plug in the outlet required.
Yes, no battery, right? Of course, you know, then with these, they would make them like solar.
Hey, you've got over here.
I swear.
Oh, yes. You just put your hand on a stack of Bibles.
I swore on a stack of Bibles.
And here's a, these look all the same. What are these things?
I'm afraid here has got the same thing kind of going on with what this has achieved, is that these are two things called Mr. Christmas.
Oh, God.
And they play, these are bells that they literally hit. But as you get two of them going at once and they don't sync, you got a way to turn that on?
Is this a piece of art you pulled out of at a garage sale? Or?
Yeah, that's the way that goes. Oh, well.
There goes the bells.
This is granny art, as it were, that a very fine use of costume jewelry, where you make a tree. In this case, a Christmas tree. It could be over here is a different one. It could be the tree of life. Could be Yggdrasil, the ultimate tree of life. But tree is often.
You did not make these. You bought them at a garage sale.
Yes.
I wanted to come over here because we mentioned at the start of our conversation that there's way more stuff that could ever possibly on display here in the Canyon
and
Gallery.
So there's photographs too. Yeah. These are things.
This is your apartment?
Yeah, what? Yeah. And I wouldn't bring these things here. I don't think it's secure enough. This is a really nice pipe collection. I got interested in pipes at least by high school. So the church warden was a terrific pipe store that was at the Walnut 11 building. And those guys would, they a little arrogant and stuff, but we still were, you'd learn anyway. John Hill pipes are really great. Sheraton, like the best tobacco was Rattray's Red Rapparee. There's some right there. Highland Targe is one I liked. And back in those days, this it's like smoking wasn't as bad for you back then as it is now. That
and
sort of thing.
You had a great knife collection, it looks like, at home.
Pocket too. Knife, yeah.
Now, is your apartment, like we've heard of hoarder apartments, difficult to navigate because of all the stuff?
I'm afraid it's know thyself, you know. And it's like if you were in a submarine, the galley. And this is just the way this second floor apartment in this old house in the Goss Grove area worked out, is that there was a hallway and a little nook for the stove, all right? And so you go through that galley, I call that the birth canal, and you get to the living womb.
And the living room has got little, you have to be able to get to the pet parakeets and to the window, and the dog has her little window and stuff, but it's not doesn't look like an open plan, let's put it that way.
Let's go back and take a look at a few more of these. Some great old toys here, including Barbie's jet. What is that?
Yeah, I guess that is Barbie's jet. Ange?
So, Ange, this is Barbie's jet, apparently?
Well, she also had, he's an expert. Aren't you?
Oh, you're a Barbie. I'm a Barbie collector. Oh, okay. And so Barbie has had lots of careers, like astronaut and pilot. And I have the Barbie van.
She's got an RV.
Yeah, the RV.
She's got a moped. There's horse. I've got the wheelchair.
So these things were all made to kind of fold out. And this is the modern plane. The older plane, I think, that was earlier 70s, was a carrying case that you would fold out into a kind of a cross section of the plane.
Yeah, they're very attractive, these things that. These Barbie things, but the boys would have their own thing, like the farm or building a skyscraper. This is beyond the erector set sort of stuff. So, and if have it, usually this would have had a beautifully printed box that it came into. That's the first thing that you lose.
Well, going back to the, you talked about the granny art, these things that folks had made by gluing costume jewelry. Up here on this wall, you have
that in a very nice way.
Yeah, no, and you have a very eclectic. Display of visual art, framed art, that I assume you've acquired at various sales.
Yeah, as curated by Ange over there, yes.
Now, Ange, did you have a particular aesthetic in mind when you chose from what is no doubt a large volume of framed art that Joel has collected?
I was really just trying to get a good cross-section of stuff. There's so many different things in those spaces, and so I think these are all very different, So, from caricatures to collage, to dogs playing pool,
and this lion. What is describe that lion?
Yeah, it's it looks like a craft project with a burlap fabric with some kind of balls of the lion's mane is this pink kind of balls of yarn or something. So it's really just you have all these different kinds of materials from photographs to this is someone's stepping in paint with tennis shoes and then stepping on the.
Very artfully done.
Yeah, very artfully done. In the far corner over there is some of Joel's original art as well. Joel's paintings. Oh. He's got a self-portrait and some big eye paintings over there.
Can we go take a look at your art?
Well, I'm a sad eye genre painter, and a society portraiture. This is one thing that Warhol was criticized for because he was doing society portraiture for, let's say, $50,000, which doesn't seem like a lot of money. And the mannerist style. Everything he did looked the same. He'd take a Polaroid with a big shot, which is a long Polaroid, and then he'd print it, and let's say that it was silk screen, and then he put these gels on it and some outline over the eyebrows. I don't think it looks that good, but it's the genre is the sad eye genre, as mainly defined by the Walter and Marion Keene. This here is one of her works. She did all of these. She painted these all. See where it says Keene, 1962.
Yeah, really big eyes.
But she's doing a beautiful job. And the rest of these are kind of copies. That's one I did. But this is the true fine art of the big eye style, the Keene eyes.
And that's you.
That's my self-portrait, that was supposed to be a Dorian Joel painting where it was supposed to get old, and I wasn't, but it didn't work out.
There are mirrors in the corners of the Canyon Gallery. Why the corners?
Well, there was a guy named Sid. He was the one that did an artist that did the thing where he took irons and put them a whole bunch of them together to look like the flat irons. And I went to his place one time, or where his girlfriend lived maybe, and it was a small place. Let's say it was at 17th, 8th, 16th and Spruce. And inside, they didn't have much stuff, but if you put mirrors in the corners at 45-degree angles, it sort of had a feeling like I was outside at that time. So we tried it here, too. And I got all these mirrors on Hippie Christmas. Hippie Christmas is where the students throw everything away, right, at the end of the year. And so you go up and down the alleys. Let's say you're on the hill. I live in Goss Grove. And everything's there. And it can be change they throw away. They throw away lots of food. The bongs, the sex toys. They're not going to take that on the plane. There's definitely beer and spirits. I've seen both of those. Dog food.
The one thing's a little sad is empty fish tanks. I wonder what happened to the fish, you know. But I use those fish tanks you can use for shelves. So,
well, you know,
to thine old shelf be true.
What do you hope people get out of coming to see this?
Well, what do I hope?
Why did you even do this?
I did it because I had such a fine boss here. Jamie Kopke was so good to me. And she wanted to do this, and she actually wanted to do it for me because I was laid off without ceremony in June of 2020, and she wanted to see me have kind of like a retirement sort of acknowledgement after 30 and a half years here. And so this was her way of doing it. It was a lot of work. I'm lucky to have Ange as the curator, who's also, you knew J.K. from the Denver Art Museum or something else as well.
Let me ask you.
So
let me
that's
ask.
Why I did it.
Yeah, can I ask you both? You know, seeing this wants me. It makes me want to see more of it. So, what is required is a way larger space.
Way larger space. But also, I'm working on a documentary, because
docudrama.
Sorry. Joel is really has a long film history, and Joel is a filmmaker. He also scored some of Stan Brakhage's films.
Soundtracks.
Joel ran the cinema program here at the library.
I saw many of the films you selected.
Well, thank you for mentioning that.
Yeah.
My family and I used to love it when you presented the 5,000 Fingers of Dr. T.
Yeah.
That's an amazing movie.
Amazing. Just talking about that. And that and so film plays in clearly with the history of Joel, and I've made documentaries before, docudrama in this case. And so I've been filming everything from Joel at garage sales to us in the inside of the tractor trailers and the whole curation process. And we'll film also the taking down of this. And
maybe getting kicked out of the apartment and stuff too. Yeah, that could happen.
Are you getting evicted or something?
No, they're going to probably sell the place. So, you know, I could end up that I can stay and they can raise the rent and I would be okay with that and so forth. But it's like Maslow's hierarchy of needs at the bottom is, how's your apartment thing working out?
Right.
So, and in fact, there was a lady, Ellen Maslow, the daughter of Abraham.
I knew Ellen.
Yeah. Well, Ellen was a garage saleaholic like me, and we'd see her every weekend, and she didn't tell us at all that she was terminally ill, and she was going to garage sales right up to the last month of her life. But it seemed that there could be, I want to do a coffee table book of like the photography and so forth of the garage sale stuff, and then another one would be maybe the sociology of garage sales. And it seemed to me that Ellen Maslow would have, you know, that, and I believe there was a story of she was going to work with another fellow on something like that, but then she died. A wonderful lady. But why was she important? She was the only one that could read Abraham's handwriting.
Well,
everything's great about it.
We're about out of time, so let's use Maslow's hierarchy of needs to conclude. Self-actualization, I believe, is the top.
Yes.
How is this helping?
Yeah.
So how would this help you achieve self-actualization?
Well, somehow I've managed to get to this point, and this, I guess, is a kind of self-actualization, and that what I'm seeing is that from the people that come in and talk, and also the kind of coverage that I've been getting in the press, is that this is something that's touching people. It comes down to what one of the alienists said about you bring people together through things. So if this exhibit brings people together to talk about things or in the context of their things and so forth, if at least it brings people together, that's an achievement. And that would be a self-actualization for me, because so many things like politics and religion separate people. Even though religion comes from religio, which means to bind together, politics, it's pretty clear, separates people. This, to bring people together, is a far, far better thing to me. And so being able to do that, I would say I feel self-actualizing.
Well, you can see part of Joel Hartlig's collection, To Have and To Hoard, on display in the Canyon Gallery through February 5th, downtown Main Library. Andrew Novick, curator, Joel Hartlig, hey, great to talk with you both.
Thank you very much.